Let's see. Well, are you there? Okay.
Bob, your Skype is on microphone again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let me just fix that.
Okay.
Okay. That should help. And maybe the other one. Hey. Oh, that helped. Okay. All right, so glad to see Chad's here. I wanted to talk to Chad. Chad is stationed here for a couple more days, so is that Chad or Kate or both? Just a second, Chad. Okay. Is that you or Kate or both?
Yeah, this is my line. Kate's calling in on a different number.
Okay, let's see. Is that you, Kate? Kate there under the block? Or this one? Is that you, Kate?
No, it's Jermaine.
Okay, that's Jermaine. So then there's a blocked one. That maybe that's Kate. Okay, how you doing, Jermaine?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
Okay, great. So let's. I would like Chad to talk about what he's learned about Maui and Hawaii in his 2.5 weeks here so far. Maybe he has a different way of talking about it. He did talk about a bit about this last week or last Saturday or something, but what's your assessment now, Chad?
Even more positive.
Yeah?
Yeah, like today we got up and went out to Big Beach.
Big
instead
Beach.
Of going
would
to
you,
the...
You've been there a lot, right?
In the afternoons, but not in the mornings. Normally, I get up in the morning and go across the street to one of the Kihei beaches because it's only like a 2-minute walk from my door to the actual
right.
beach. So
well,
that's always good. But
well, yeah, Big Beach, hey Chad. Big Beach is the nude beach near there?
Yeah, it's on the same piece of land. It's just on the other side of a big rock.
Yeah, do you go there?
Yeah.
So when you go
more,
there,
it's more adult over there. Like the other side, the Big Beach has got more like families of little kids and stuff.
Yeah,
and it's more like the water looks turquoise. It's like better where you can see the bottom more. Whereas Big Beach has a really big kind of crushing break that comes in.
Yeah,
so this is more like
more?
Yeah, Big Beach is more stirred up, and Little Beach is more. Like, it's more of a gentle water.
Right. So for the families go to the gentle water, and that's Big Beach.
No, the Big Beach is the rough one.
Which one's the naked one?
Little Beach.
Ah, okay. So Big Beach is the rough one, and that's the one the families go to.
Yeah, and it has lifeguards on it, and it's big, and it's got a big drop. When you get to
yes.
the water's edge, and then Little Beach is just more—it's more like paradise. It's calm
okay.
and serene. Yeah,
yeah. Because I've never been to either. I walked there once, but I don't go swimming there because Big Beach. There's always people getting injured there. It's the
mm-hmm.
rumors and broken necks and stuff at the Big Beach, the family one. You know, wherever the rough one is, this huge
yeah,
waves.
The big one is the rough one.
Yeah. So. All right, so when you're at the nude beach, naked beach, can you wear clothes?
Yeah.
You can?
It's not like it's not mandatory nudity or anything.
All right. Oh, who's that laughing? That would be, I'm not sure who that was. Who laughed there? Oh, that's Alyssa. Yeah, we recognize that childish little girl.
Yeah, they can tell someone from the Midwest would find it embarrassing or childish sounding to hear about people being nude on a beach.
No, I'm laughing that it would be mandatory.
Yeah.
Which would be great.
No, that's like the nude beach at UBC is almost mandatory. When you don't go nude there, these hippie thugs come up and start harassing you.
Really?
What do they say?
This is a fucking nude beach. What are you doing wearing clothes here? Are you coming here to take pictures? This is our beach. Just this like sense of entitlement that they have.
That's funny.
Are they bad Americans, draft dodgers, or are they Canadians?
Probably.
They're probably American.
Probably
yeah.
The children. They're draft dodgers or the children of draft dodgers.
Right. No, I don't mean Alyssa's a naive Midwesterner, but she has this little girl laugh, sort of slightly little girl or something. Maybe not all the time. What was that? Was that protest?
I was laughing a different way. Whatever.
Yeah. So my theme was what?
How great Maui is. So report on Maui.
Yeah, I've got.
So anyway.
I want to add this. This is the context. Carolyn just come back from the pool, so she's hearing this. Glad she's part of it. So we went to Honolulu yesterday to register, do the next stage in registering to becoming citizens of Hawaii. Oh, it was today. Yeah, it was yesterday. I was up all night, and I didn't go to sleep before. We got our cab at 5 in the morning, had to be there by 5:30 for a 7 o'clock flight. The flight was 25 minutes. Then so that would get us at 7:30. We got a cab there, got 10 to 8, 5 to 8. They opened at 8, and we were out in half an hour after getting fingerprinted on the digital and the old-fashioned way. What, Carol?
Ink.
What?
Ink.
Hey, get off mute.
Ink.
Oh, ink? What'd I say?
Old-fashioned way, you said.
Oh, I didn't say ink? Oh, okay. So driving through Honolulu, we had a different view of it than the last time. We went through the downtown high-rises, but it was so disgusting compared to Wailea. And when we went left and went back to the airport, we went a different route, which was more familiar, and that was, I don't know, through the Bass Highway. So we got a really good view of Honolulu, and then flew out from there, and very good, the best view of the beaches net. And the beaches are crummy compared to Wailea. You couldn't walk there in 2 minutes kind of scene. It's all built up. It's disgusting.
No way, and you're fighting throngs of tourists.
That's right, and there was a traffic jam on the way to the thing at, what time would that be, Carol?
That was
5:30.
Last time I was here. Yeah, last time I was here in 2009, and I flew over. Remember, I was here for 10 days, and then I flew over to Honolulu for 3 days or something. And, wow, the huge contrast. Honolulu did seem like same impression. It was dirty. It was packed. The beaches were more – what's that?
Like L.A.
Yeah, it's more like L.A. And the beaches are kind of like for show. Like they're not as enjoyable to go in the water or anything. It's more just people – strutting along, trying to look good.
Yeah. And if you go up to the northern shore where the big surfing perfect places are in, I guess, in December, January, I've never, well, we went there in 71, but haven't been there ever. And I don't know if you can, you maybe live up there, but I don't know, probably a lot of tourist stuff there. So it just made me realize how fantastic Maui is. Maui is the best place in the world. And so I was thinking, no, Chad realized this. So I was wondering, that's why I'm thinking of this, because Honolulu, I'm so glad we don't have anything to do with that. We didn't know anything about Maui. I'm really glad that Ed Seaton was here and brought us here in middle of November 2007. And we wouldn't have known. And then his brother was leaving the island, so their bungalow that they were staying at, we just moved in there. And then 6 months later, Ed found us the house that we're in now. So that was December 2008. So here, 7.5 years here, and it's the best house in the compound and the best part, and Wailea is the best part. So we're in this incredible place. Our own house is the top of the situation. Just marveling at all that our luck in this situation. So back to you, Chad. That's maybe on a practical level. Give me some esoteric points you want to make about Maui.
Well, I just want to say, like, being from Canada, like the eastern part of Canada in Ontario, back when I came out to British Columbia, everyone was like, wow, you're moving to the best place in Canada. Fair enough. It probably is the best place to live. It's got the best climate for that horribly cold, disgusting country. But anyway, when I got out to British Columbia in the late 90s, people were starting to say that it was the best place in the world to live. And then magazines started saying it was the best place in the world to live, and it just, they even put on the license plate now, it says something like, the best place in the world, British Columbia. So I know, they have this idea that they've convinced themselves that they live in the best place in the world. But today when I was driving back from the beach, in my head I'm thinking, as I'm driving through Wailea on the way back from Big Beach, just taking it all in, I'm thinking, okay, it's not a question of whether Wailea is better than Vancouver, it's how many times better it is than Vancouver. It's like, is it 20 times? Would it be fair to say 40 times? Like, I'm trying to figure out how much better it is. Yeah. And all these idiots in Canada, they just think that it's the best country in the world, but it's absolute sewage compared to here.
Yeah.
The air is cleaner, the mental air is cleaner, like the psychic energy or whatever it is, the space that you're in. Like, I've got so much clarity here, and the things I'm learning on my own, on my chip body while I'm here, and exploring like higher levels of mathematics and machine learning stuff, I haven't achieved that level of focus in Vancouver yet. There's always some kind of interruption or sirens or somebody's fucking kids are screaming. It's just horrible. It's like a fucking FEMA camp compared to here. And I agree, Wailea is the best. Of all the places I've been to on Oahu and on Maui, Wailea is the best. Like, the Grand Wailea Hotel is literally like a temple. Like, when you walk around the grounds of it, it's so clean, so well manicured, so bright looking. It almost seems like a hologram.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And just the daily routine that we have. We get up in the morning, and I used to go for long walks in Vancouver to try to wake myself up. And here I just go jump in the water. The water temperature is fucking perfect. And then I just take a shower outside, and that's my morning wake up. And I go have a little breakfast, jump on the computer. I get massive, like, insights and stuff because my mind is so fucking clear and I'm so alert. And, you know, it takes me, like, 10 minutes to sift through my emails instead of, like, trudging through them over the course of 2 hours. And it just, everything's clicking. And then it's like, okay, it's getting warmer. Why not just go jump back in the water again and then come back and then go for dinner? And then maybe go for ice cream. It's such a perfect routine. There's no shit that gets in your way. We bought coconut, like a raw coconut or whatever, on the side of the road off these natives today. So I got to actually interact with natives, and that was a nice experience. You know, when you're driving from Wailea out to Big Beach.
Yeah.
On the side of the road, as you approach Big Beach, there's a few people that are just selling coconuts on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And we pulled over. So we stopped to get one. We said, whatever, we're on vacation. Let's have the coconut experience. And they take the machete out and they cut it and they put a straw on it and give it to you. And I gave them a nice tip. And she gave me a handful of bananas. And they're like very sharing and giving. And I like their sense of humor. The natives here have a really cool sense of humor. We were getting our hamburger.
How would you describe it?
It's kind of sarcastic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Canadian natives. The ones in Vancouver, they have no sense of humor. They're very, like, stoic and rigid, and they have to remind everyone how upset they are that these idiots are on their land and all that. And I don't blame them, but anyway, they don't have that kind of loose sense of humor. Here, they just kick it with you. If you're cool to them, they'll shoot the shit with you. And the lady who made the hamburger place I go to, this girl is a native that works there, and it was funny because we went up and ordered, and then we went and stood off to the side waiting for our hamburgers to be made. And then this couple came up, and they seemed kind of like tight-ass and rigid. And their name was called to come pick up their hamburgers, and they just grabbed their hamburgers and, like, walked away, didn't say thanks or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And the native girl at the counter that served them, she just made this face. She's like, enjoy. But her eyes, like, opened really big, like she's being sarcastic, like, enjoy, you fuckers. You know, get a fucking life. Be happy, for fuck's sakes. You're in fucking Maui. You know, enjoy your goddamn hamburger. Don't be such a tight ass. So I like their sarcasm. I think they, I told them, you know, your home here is a beautiful place. This time of year, for example, it would be just cooking. It would probably be hitting over 100 degrees every day. So there's no seasons here. It's just like smooth sailing.
Yeah, you know, I'm probably the happiest guy on the planet, but compared to the average tourist and people zonked out of the bliss here. I'm the grumpiest guy in this fucking place.
hey, Bob, tell them how you yelled at the kid today in the airport.
It's funny how you keep saying today. Okay, so I was up all night.
It's not funny. It's true.
Okay,
it was
so,
today.
Wait a minute, Carol. So I'm just trying to get oriented here. That's right. So I was up all night. I didn't sleep. We went there. I dozed a bit on the plane going there. So because you, it's a 25-minute flight, I went down 10 minutes. And when I got up, I was exhausted. I had to be, you know, I'm going down deep, right? Then I have to be jolted up 10, 15 minutes later
right.
to get up out of the
yeah.
plane.
I had to carry him out of the plane.
Yeah, I was fucking stumbling around. I said, fuck, I'm not used to the pain of having my sleep interrupted. I'm so used to having a perfect sleep. You know, I go so deep, I go into dreamless sleep. Thompson writes about dreamless sleep all the time. And it got interrupted. So I was disoriented for the whole fucking time at Honolulu. And I think, oh yeah, so then I ate about 500 chocolate bars. And so we get back to the airport, which would be, it's half hour later. So we're you know, no, maybe we're in there. We arrive there at 5 to 8, 10 to 8. So we get out at 8:30, get a cab by 20 to 9, get over there by 5 to 9. So I'm out of the airport for an hour. Now I'm back. Now Carolyn's feeling a little tired. Now I'm starting all whacked out on the sugar. So I start acting up. Is that what I did? I don't even remember this kid thing. What happened, Carol? Was that on the way back?
The kid was punching the potato
oh,
chip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was great. So we're coming back, and I'm going to stock up more chocolate bars, and, oh, there's a place to get a juice. So I'm standing there figuring out, what, like, they got a slat here, a window, and
he
I can't.
He couldn't get into the juice. He stood there like a little kid and waited for someone to open it for him.
So I'm standing there trying, and nothing moves. I go, what is this, new kind of juice thing? Maybe only the cashier purse, the clerk can open it? So eventually, there's a break, and I said, how do you get a juice? And so the customer beside me just puts her head and lightly lifts something so easily. I go, oh, you can lift that up. Okay. So that was a sign of how out of it I was. But in the course of standing there trying to figure out how to open the thing, I see this little kid. He might have been about six years old.
Six or seven.
Yeah. He's bashing one of these little chip bags. You know, they have
potato
a
potato chip.
Potato chip. And they're like fluffy. You know, but they're stiff, right? They,
We all know potato chip bags, Bob.
So he's bashing it. So I just yell, hey, you're going to get arrested! Don't say anything, Kel. Don't you ruin it. Don't you say anything, Kel. Okay. So I go, hey, kid, hey, you're going to get arrested. And the kid bolts up. Bob's astral, multidimensional voice probably shocked his chakras, shocked all his cells. The whole thing goes, and bolts up and looks at me, and his father looks over, Hawaiian father, right? Which is a good example of their humor. Is he Hawaiian?
Kid? That's why I'm bringing
this
up.
Don't say anything. I just wanted to establish. Is he fucking Hawaiian? I think he is.
Samoan. He was a big,
oh, yeah, so he's Samoan.
Huge Samoan.
So he's looking
and
over.
And Bob is screaming at his kid
I'm screaming.
That he's going to be a little
was making so much noise. I don't know if my yelling made the father turn around and look at the kid, or he was starting to look at what the sound was, because the kid was really bashing the potato bag. And so I interrupted his movement to look at the kid, and so he started laughing, so he had a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I said, that, your kid probably never heard the word arrested before. I don't even know what it means. And he laughed at that. And so the kid scuttered off and ran away from me and hid somewhere. Right, Joe?
Well, he was sort of grinning and smiling. You didn't beat him down.
No, he was self-conscious. He was a little shocked and self-conscious. So his father finished paying for it. I don't know, did he get the bag of chips? I don't know if he did.
No, I started teasing him that I got a couple bags of kettle potato chips, and I said, I'm having potato chips for breakfast.
You said that to the kid?
To the kid, yeah. He laughed.
So they walk away. By this time, I'm hysterically laughing at the wonderful scene. I've just created another instant art form by Bob. And then we talked about how incredible it was. And I was thinking, yeah, the kid wouldn't know what arrested means.
You're going to get arrested, kid.
I assume he didn't, so I'm glad Carolyn remembered that. I forget half of my life. I'm so blissed out all the time. So, so we're flying back, Carolyn, and we get here. And, oh, yeah, so then we can get back earlier because it took so little time. We were supposed to come back at 11:30, but we could get back at 5 to 10. That's when we could fly back. So we're back at 10:30. Our own cabbie guy, butler cab guy, picked us up. We got home by 11, and I was able to go to sleep by 11:30, so I got 3 hours sleep till 2:30. And that was perfect. So I had my early morning 7:30 to 10:30 sleep from 11:30 to 2:30. So I'm just starting the day, right, Carol? But so this is, I don't see why I'm disoriented. This is natural. But
yeah, so you this is your new day.
You look at this morning at 5 a.m.
Yesterday. Yeah, it's yesterday, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was earlier today. So, but I was marveling on the way home. Now, I said, Carol, so what do you think of becoming an American? I don't think you ever thought you'd be saying you're an American. She said, I'm not becoming an American. Well, what are we doing? Oh, we're going to be Hawaiians. So that's how I figured out to compromise this. Oh, we're going to be Hawaiians? See, Carol's always working on these matters. Oh, great. So I announced, I don't know if you heard, Carol, that we're on our way to becoming Hawaiians. So, because I don't think Carol's ever liked America or Americans. She got typical British background bias of this place. So she's been secretly working it out in her own conscience, her own mind. She's not going to tell people she's American. She's going to say she's a fucking Hawaiian. So I've just caught up to that. Yeah. I don't mind being American or saying it, but it is odd saying you're American. I know a lot of Canadians are going to be, that we know or did know. I don't know if they're our friends anymore. They will be shocked to hear if we said we're an American, but well, now we're going to say Hawaiian and they won't even understand that it's real unless they've asked some more. So that's the wonderful world we live in. Now, back to – why don't we bring – let's, Chad, you were going to say another point, but we want to hear Kate, because Kate has been here many times. She's been here more than you, right, Chad?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, several times.
Through her family. So did you have something to say, or shall we let Kate explain what she thinks about
Kate
now?
Kate can have a turn. She can have a go at it.
Well,
yeah.
I agree with everything Chad described it. That's how I feel also. Like, I've definitely taken a shift in my life, like, what I've been working on. Like, everything that I've been doing, I feel like I just want to throw it all in the garbage, and I'm starting totally fresh on the new endeavors that are extremely exciting and new to me that I don't think I, even if I was in Vancouver, would have realized that I was actually good at this and that it actually interests me. So, like, accessing more of my chip body on a different level, I can actually focus on it in a different way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but, like, I in Vancouver, I felt like I was actually going insane. Like, you know how, Bob, you described, like, how some people go through, like, that stage exile, like you're like cut everybody
you from,
out. You
from ionized? You mean being ionized?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like being here, I feel like I'm.
You lost that alienation.
That
you're saying you lost the alienation of the ion
yeah.
effect. Well, that's great.
Yeah, and I feel like there's more. Like I'm not like just getting through day by day. I feel like the whole, every day is just one day now. Like I was, like I'm timeless. But before I was like, oh, here's another day. Like, what am I gonna do? Oh, what am I gonna do? Oh, what am I gonna do? But yeah, like how Chad described it, like you wake up and everything is just so clear every single day. And yeah, like I sleep better, I breathe better, I can eat more ice cream and have absolutely no contrast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't think I realized that when I first came here. And then I could say that being involved with ION certainly energized me in a new way back in 2009, 2010. But Maui itself, that factor, hearing what you're saying, shows what we got going before Ion showed up, or what affected us. It's been great hearing your view of it, because was the changes I thought were happening to me were from the drops and from ion, but maybe the ion thing has made us more focused. I think Carolyn or somebody used to say back in 2010-11 that I could explain from their point of view, long-time listeners, I could explain McLuhan better or whatever I was talking about. I was better at it, and I thought that was ion, but maybe it's big deal is part of Maui is doing that. You would say that now, wouldn't you? About me. I've been influenced by Maui.
Are you talking to me, Bob?
Yeah.
No, I'm saying to Kate that whatever fantastic reality I express, it's a Maui influence, not just ion.
So I think what's happening, it's like Maui is so ionized anyway with all the great negative ions, good air and everything. It's the environment that iondom wants to grow into.
Yeah, it's so unbelievably appropriate that iondom starts its new, quote, world religion effect here, right? It's so appropriate, right, Chad?
I totally agree. And I kind of forgot that feeling after having been over on the mainland for 7 years. Because my first trip here, I felt a lot of that, but it was still so early in iondom, and it was the first time I actually met you and Carolyn in person, so there was kind of a different effect. But at the same time, there's still some similarities, just like this constant perfection in the environment here.
Yeah, now you did say after a week that it's a bit more run-down looking than you remember in 2009, and that's due to the recession effect here. You did notice it seemed
shabbier. Not at all in Wailea. It's just Kihei, when you go a little bit north, towards Lahaina, and then Lahaina itself looks a little bit more cheap than it did before.
But you're not living there. You're not going to be part of that. If you stay here, you're in Kihei, Wailea area.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not. Now, there was another female voice was going to say something. What was that? Who was that?
I just said the Pacific. I was referencing the William Irwin Thompson because Hawaii is in the Pacific.
Well, what were we going to say about it?
I was just acknowledging the Pacific, the movement away from the Atlantic to the Pacific.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Pacific ship.
Hawaii,
You're reading Transforming History. What do you think of that?
I love it. Every sentence is amazing.
Right, and it's a great review of whatever you learned in college or history and more, right? More than school education.
It's really nice. I've been sort of intuiting and picking up on a lot of different things since learning your stuff and engaging with ION. And it's kind of, you know, in a way, it's bringing all of that to a tabletop that I can look at and I can play with and I can eat, and it's nice.
Okay, so we'll get back to that, Thompson. I didn't want to go into it. So, Kate, you've expressed what, did you discover this new chip body aspect? While here, or you were planning it before, but you couldn't focus in Vancouver?
No.
Or did you discover something new?
I just discovered it here, and I don't even know. Like, me and Chad are always brainstorming, like, what I can possibly do. Like, I always knew that there's something in me that needed to just come out and, like, express in a certain way. We just never knew what it was. So I thought, look, I'm going to go to Maui, and I'll just, like, you know, read some Bob stuff and, you know, figure something out. Maybe I'll get some new insights right away, like within the first week. And we're like, oh my God, like, why didn't we think of this like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. And
so you didn't expect that. You didn't expect that insight. You didn't expect what happened to you.
Everything's lining up perfectly. Like, now I'm seeing more anomalies. Like, the times on the clock are becoming, like, 3-3-3 and 4-4-4. Like, constantly things like that. Really cool.
I've had that, too.
So I feel like I'm lining up. Maybe I'm more catching up with myself or something. I don't know.
So the shock will be when you go back to Vancouver. And, you know, like our foster kids never could adjust back after being here for a couple of weeks. They, I don't know if Carol talks to Shannon more than I do, but has she talked about the pain of leaving Maui more, Carol? Any more about that?
Yeah.
Try unmuting. So you just said they don't talk about it much.
Every day they talk about
yeah, their experience here. So even just going to an airport is ridiculous. We go into the special level because you sign up before. Carol does all this, signs up. We have our little, what's it called? What do you call this process? You get a boarding pass before you get... You do this online thing so that you don't have to take your shoes off. And they give you an extra, a shorter line, and it's a lot better. You go through, but I hate airports now. I hate the people in them. I hate everybody. I'm constantly hating. I mean, even hating everybody here.
And all the waiters of the world.
Yes. They're all waiting. Like, I'm walking around saying, holy shit, I got the answer to every fucking thing. And all I can do is yell at little kids for being so stupid. They won't even be interested in it. And so I was partly pissed off at that kid. I said, you're going to get fucking arrested, buddy. I was just channeling my frustration at the poor kid. I don't think you get arrested if you bang the potato chip bag, do you? I think I exaggerated it. But he was violent. He was just like smashing the bag, and it could break any point.
But,
so I'm walking around being eternal, and 10,000 years old or even more, looking at everybody worried about their little stupid shit, and we got solutions for everything. So, you know, many people report the extreme alienation they go through at first after being ionized. Well, you know, I've had to deal with that in a mild way for 8 years or something, in 7 years. So,
but that's so bizarre, Bob. Here you are, the ultimate anarchist. You'll yell in public that you're going to punch your wife in the face, but you worry about a bag of potato chips. I mean, what?
Well, that's what I think it was an alibi. I was just pissed off at that I was forced to leave Maui. I had a lot of fucking hatred fueling it. And so I just used that kid to
you're bent.
I vented there. So one woman that I have bumped into since I got here, I think she works in something called a Tutti Frutti over by the surf area where you surf, Chad. And so once every 6 months, 4 or 5 months, she seems to walk after work. So if I get into a routine of walking at 6 o'clock or something, I'll pass by her once every 4 or 5 months. So way back there, she noticed that I was carrying a boogie board, and that was like for 4 years. And then when I didn't have any, she said, where's your boogie board? And I said, I'm into long distance swimming now. I'm not doing that. So every time so the next 2 years, every 6 months I see her, she goes, where's your boogie board? So I keep retelling, look, I'm fucking swimming now. I'm not doing that anymore. I did that for 4 months worth, 4 years worth. And so then she's usually wanting to walk along with this guy. So he's walking behind her. She's in a forceful woman who is in charge of her life, and the man has to tag along behind her, 3 feet behind her. So about a year ago, they're coming along towards me, and we're getting ready to. She's always like kibitzing with me. So as she's walking, she's getting before she sees me, I start holding a board, but there's no board there. I was holding an imaginary board, you know. and they approach me, and I go, look, I'm back. I'm boarding again. I'm back in the board and looking at the board. So they crack up. We don't talk. They just laugh their heads off and keep going. So the other day, okay, I did this a couple of times. So they're getting used to the fact that I was claiming to be boarding again. You have to look at me. I'm walking along as if I'm holding a board, right? My hands curled up to my waist, and I'm walking along and holding it. So I'm all proud that I'm backboarding. So now that I've those Thompson pages I posted, the charts and that, Dave, I posted about 17, 19 pages, many charts, summaries of the Transforming History curriculum. So I'm memorizing it, and I did this with Ulysses. Did anybody ever see the video I made with Roxy where I go through the famous charts? If you let James Mayfer, and I've got a blindfold on, so I'm not cheating. Well, my new, I wonder what to memorize. I hated memorizing because you're going over and over and you say, geez, I'm only thinking these thoughts, but I had to do it to memorize it. So it actually limits your thinking. And I was glad to stop it once I'd record it. So I was wondering, what, I don't even think I'll ever do that again. But now these charts, I said, I want to memorize those. So I just started memorizing the other day. So I'm walking along. I'm the only guy in the world. Everybody else is looking at their cell phone. I'm looking at pieces of paper, white, big, nice pieces of paper, like documents. And I'm going along with a head down, reading them, looking up, looking away, and memorizing them. And so then I'm doing that, coming back home. And there they are. There's the couple. And so as they approach, she goes, of course, she's always nosy. What are you reading? I said, secret documents. I have a new mission. And I said, and then they start to think and laugh a bit, and they go, I can't use the board anymore. No more boarding. By that time, they're passing me. So that's when they're laughing at me saying, secret, what are you leading? Secret documents. I have a new mission. Their order's been given to Bob, right? And what is the mission? Definitely can't use the board anymore. So that was me performing. I'm a great performer. I should be paid by the hotel. You know, of course, nobody notices me. And the kids aren't allowed to notice me. They can't report that this human being spoke to them. So I'm just another, I'm the only anonymous performer on Boardwalk. I should be have a busker little hat that people throw coins in, because I am performing for selecting
audiences. You're a reality hacker.
Yeah.
But and they are secret documents. The funny thing is, Kate, whoever's just, no, that's Alyssa, I am not lying. These are, the way I'm looking at what the charts are pointing to I am them, that's why I'm memorizing them, it's such a great preamble to the Ionic world, that they are secret documents. I'm not lying.
Yeah.
This is funny to everybody. Oh, he's a funny guy, but no, I'm just telling them what's actually happening, but I don't insist. I don't insist to tell them that this is real, but there is a reality. It's real easy to improvise this stuff because I just have to talk what I'm doing.
Yeah, Chad, when you said reality hacker, and Bob, when you were telling me telling us the story, it made me think of another story where you walk by some kid in the airport and you're like, wake up!
You know what I usually say, Alyssa? Maybe I go, you're not going to get away with this. You're not fooling anybody. I did that to women, to adults. I showed them what I do to kids, to adults, just for Kate and Chad last week. That was funny.
Yeah.
But I think we talked about that.
Yeah.
But the just marveling at the environment. So Chad and Kate, I guess, are going to scheme to get back here, right?
No comment.
No
comment.
We have
to go back and feel the contrast of what it's like to be back in Vancouver.
Right.
And then take the next step, but probably what we're going to do is just keep moving around for a while, because the problem with Canada is if you stay somewhere too long, it just becomes a quagmire.
If you stay too long somewhere else or in Canada?
If you stay too long in one place, it really starts to break down.
In Canada?
Yeah, I can't stand anywhere in Canada. So like a lizard on hot sand, I'm just going to keep lifting my feet and don't plant them on the ground too long. So we might go to the Caribbean or something and hop around in the southern United States and just use as much of our time in the States as we can. Spend time in the Caribbean. I don't know, but like, absolute pile of shit. And the sooner I can permanently get out of that country, the better.
Yeah, it is, in retrospect, it was great in the 80s and 90s, 70s, 80s, 90s. It was a perfect place. Even Bucky Fuller said Toronto was the best city in the world back then, but it's become pretty bad now.
It's not the same place. Even Vancouver, when I was out there in the late 90s, when I first got there, I was like, this is Shangri-La. This place is amazing. The people are so cool. There's so many good bands and stuff like that going on. Like, there's so much happening, and it was fun and open-minded. And then the condo people moved in and just turned it into a really boring place.
Yeah, and then the Chinese. Now you got the damn Chinese. And I think I read, Chad, the other day and read somewhere that they are now known to own all of Canada. Did you see that article, or is that known?
I posted an article on dupes about how they're buying up Canada's real estate.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's what I looked at. Yeah, and so they're taking over the good parts of America.
You know what else sucks about Canada? It's amazing here in Hawaii. I don't know what the rest of the U.S. is like, but Florida was pretty good for it, and Hawaii's good for it. And it's a thing called food. You can get, like, a lot of different kinds of food here. But in Canada, you can only get a few things that they allow to be in the country. And now there's fewer and fewer tasty and nutritional things that you can get from the United States into Canada because Health Canada seems to just keep banning or charging people too much to import these things. It's getting ridiculous.
I noticed that when we were touring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You noticed that. Yeah, actually, it's a disadvantage to be in Canada. You can't get our products. There's a hassle there. You can't get, no, there's no other products worth it. But so you can't get our stuff.
Here's the thing. It costs $10, no, $15 to express priority mail our big package of RNA products over here to Hawaii, and it took 3 days. Getting to Vancouver, which is on the mainland, it takes 2 weeks, sometimes more, and it can cost almost $40 to ship it.
Yeah.
Just slow mail because they molest the package at the border.
Yeah.
And it sits there in a warehouse.
Yeah, it's like Canadians have been spoiled. McLuhan called Canada Utopia back in the 60s and 70s, and it was, in Toronto especially. But now that the world's changing and being a Canadian is irrelevant, the Canadians have got all their inferiority is now coming out, and they resent the bitterness, or what's in postmodern language called resentment, the hidden resentment, the bitterness of being a Canadian now is all they've got for their identity. So this is what you're picking up on, Chad.
And all the wealthy people that I've talked to in Vancouver in the last year or so, and even in Alberta, they're all like spending 6 months of the year down in California. They spend every day that they can in the U.S. until they have to come back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad, but it's a useless place. It was always British intelligence. There's this little sliver, LaRouche used to talk about, you know, a little sliver of population on the border to bug Americans, for the British intelligence to go through Ottawa and through RCMP and CSIS and control Washington for the European oligarchs. Especially in beater terms since late 70s when the Bolsheviks and the Rothschilds took over New York through Tina Brown and her husband, who was the editor, main guy at the London Times. Those people, those British people came in, took over. So America has that problem. And that was what Canada was for. And so the Canadian ambassador is the most powerful guy in the world, in diplomatic world. You look at Alan Gottlieb in the 80s, he was the most traveled guy between Ottawa and Toronto and Washington, back and forth, because he was running Washington, or he represented those international forces that use Canada. Canada's like the Switzerland of the solar government. So now that's falling apart because of us. So the reason for Canada, it's British intelligence reason, is not valid anymore. So there's no point in being Canadian. Why would you live up there? What the fuck are you preserving? Oh, I don't want to be an American. I must be British or have the Queen over. There's no point being up in that coal area anymore. And Fort McMurray knows it. Fort McMurray started to commit suicide. You know, Canadians are committing suicide.
Baudrillard.
Right. Baudrillard said the Twin Towers committed suicide. So they were so shocked. The tower was so shocked that these little nobodies, you know, sucker punched them earlier in the day. By noon hour, there was so much global New York time, noon hour, there was so much global coverage of the thing, the tower was so humiliated, so they killed themselves. The Android beam. But it's a spiritual experience to come to Maui. Which is what Bob Marshall told me in 2000. He came over here. We had been here in 71 and 82 or 83. I think it was 83. And I was saying to Carolyn on the plane today, you know, no wonder we didn't have any attraction for Maui. We were in Honolulu. It just didn't strike me as something worth going for. But we didn't know anything about Maui. Didn't know it. Didn't have any interest in Hawaii. And that was because
it's not as high profile.
Right. And so Carolyn, so the guy that took our fingertips, took Carolyn's fingertips, you said to him, why don't you move to Maui? Right, Carolyn? And this was a long-haired guy, a WASP kind of guy, you know, a white guy.
I said, why don't they have an office in Maui? Why do we have to fly over here?
What'd he say?
He said they keep talking about it, but they never do it. But, yeah, if they had an office there, I'd be there.
And then he said, why aren't you there? And he says, you can't get a job there.
Right.
There's no yuppie level of employment. You just work in the service industry in the hotels, and maybe that's Tampa or not much income. So an average ambitious white guy can't survive in Maui. So that made us even think, well, we're quite isolated. We're in a nowhere place. We're the minority that actually lives here. There have been people, tourists I've talked to, they're shocked that we live here. They don't know you can live here. And they probably think, well, you can just only work in hotels and that. And that's probably right. But with our situation, you can live here and have an online business.
So many people still think that you have to live where your business is.
Yeah.
I can't believe how far behind most people are in that thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good example of perceptual lag right there that people naturally have.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, is there someone, I forget who Newark is, they keep coming in, is that like Tim or Jason? No, Jason's Canadian. Who's at 973?
It's Tim.
Oh yeah, Tim. Anything you want to say about this? You glad you're not a Canadian?
No. I don't know anything about that.
What'd you say?
No, I don't know anything about being Canadian, so I can't say.
Yeah, do you know anything? Okay, do you know anything about Canada? And you know, rather than judging it, do you know anything about Canada?
No.
It's such a non-entity place. You know, the Americans aren't interested in Canada. So, what did you think of the place, Jermaine, when you were over here with the giant basketball player?
I loved it. Yeah, it was so peaceful and beautiful. Just the scenery alone, everything visually is amazing. And then the water, the nature, the smell, fresh air. I really loved it.
Yeah.
You know, we went on a helicopter ride, too, and we got to see the whole island. So it was really fun.
Are you going to do that, Chad? Did you guys do a helicopter?
No.
No, we didn't do a helicopter. So
and
we got to go up on that. We got to go up country and look down on and see both coasts at the same time.
I don't do those things because I know if I go up in a helicopter, I will be killed. You know, I know they're waiting for me to do that, so I do not take risks with the potential sabotage of Bob's life.
Chad, I like your plan, you guys traveling and just going everywhere. That's something I want to do, just travel everywhere and not have to live somewhere permanently.
Yeah, it's digital nomadism.
That's fun. You know, I was watching, it's so funny you guys are talking about Canada today because Sunday I watched a movie called Take This Waltz. And it's with Seth Rogen, and it's not a comedy. He's usually in a lot of comedy movies, and it's in Canada. I don't know what part, but it's about.
Yeah, that's from that's written by Leonard Cohen, Canada's famous poet.
And it's so depressing, and I'm watching that movie, and I'm like, why do I keep on watching this? This is depressing.
Yeah, Canada's most famous poet, Leonard Cohen, looks so depressed.
Even the colors.
What are you talking about? There's a movie about Cohen, or he's an actor in it?
No, I guess Cohen is the writer.
Take This Waltz is a song or a poem or a novel written by Leonard Cohen. I don't remember which one.
Okay, and so it's a fictional movie.
Yeah, and it was very, the mood was very depressing. The vibe was very depressing.
What's the story? Was it about Montreal where Leonard Cohen lives or used to live?
Yeah, it's about a couple that lives together, and it seems that the girl's very bored in that home. And the houses, everything looks just like depressing. The colors, like what they do for every day. There's one moment. The girl wakes up at 5:30 to follow her neighbor because that's how bored she is. And I'm just thinking, this is really weird. Like, it's just, and I was trying to think, is it because I've heard, like, you know, you guys talk about Canada's not that much of a happy place. But then now today, listening to you guys talk about Canada in that way again, and I just watched that movie on Sunday, then I'm kind of like judgmental towards Canada.
Right. So what did you say the woman did? She did what in the movie?
She was really depressed, and she was married to this guy for 5 years, and she ends up falling in love with her neighbor, and it was like a coincidence. They met in an airplane flying back to their house to Canada. And she didn't do much. She would wake up every day and just be around the house. And I think that's why she got so bored and started, like, following the neighbor. And left her husband for that guy. And then at the end, she ends up alone anyways.
Yeah, having an affair in Canada is pretty boring. You know, you have that many guys. No alternative difference is made by going with your neighbor, right? That's what you're saying here.
Yeah.
So is this Cohen's point? Is Leonard Cohen trying to point out the boring of Canada?
Probably. Dead? Probably.
Okay. And so why would you watch this movie? Is Seth Rogen a famous American actor?
I just watched it because it was on Netflix, and I had the TV on while I was cleaning and doing things. So I was paying attention and doing things, and then I just watched it all the way to the end because then I was curious what was going to happen with this girl. She left her husband for the neighbor. She went to go live with him, and then at the end, she ends up alone because I guess the neighbor left her, the new boyfriend slash neighbor left her too.
It was so boring, they didn't even bother filling in the reasons why she was alone. They got bored making the thing. Didn't even complete
it. What caught my attention is, like, I paid attention to a lot of visual stuff, and the colors in the movie were very dim. Like, the energy of the movie, the mood, the vibe was very depressing. Mm-hmm. And now that I hear you guys talking about it's not, like, a happy place, and then the movie showed that.
Yeah,
just based on color and, like, and the setting and just the places that they showed around the city where they lived, it seemed very sad.
And it's a city, so it could be Toronto, Montreal,
it's
not
Toronto.
Vancouver. It's Toronto.
I'm just looking at Wikipedia. It says, Toronto.
Yeah, so now, Jermaine, know the movie the TV series called Peaky Blinders?
No.
PEAK. That is the most amazing series. Just like Boardwalk Empire is about how Hoover sets up the FBI and the mafianization of unions and stuff, because it's set in basically around 1922. So the guys, whoever's making Peaky Blinders, they're sort of saying, okay, we're going to show the rise of Winston Churchill. You know, and Ian's talked about what a creep he was, always building walls. So he's a creep like Hoover. So this movie is about how Churchill takes over global intelligence and what he does. So it's a really good historical document. Now, the main character is a guy who grows up in the worst ghetto, and they fight their way up to getting taking over London. Now, so saying on the way home to count, all this guy does is the leader of the gang. He just walks. He's always walking around with his head down and his little cap, and he has a knife or a sharp thing in the peak of his cap. So when they were young, when they'd fight people, they just slice them with their cap. So they had the weapon right in their peak, you know, and they blind people with slicing with the peak of their little cap. This is 1920s seafaring Garrett Dean Beetle kind of cap. 60s Beetle cap, maybe, was a retrieval. So he's always walking around through the factories that he's taken over in Birmingham, a horribly polluted scene. And he's not saying hi to anybody. He's always smoking, going along. And he's always walking around just introducing himself to people. He comes in and he figures out whether to kill them or just will they go along. He takes over all these companies and things. And but all he does, everybody else, his underlings, his family, his brothers, they have to do the killing and all the other orders that we'll call what's his name? What do they call this guy? I don't even remember his name. We call him Mikey. So Mike, no, Bob. So Bob is walking around. Oh, did we get clicked off? Are we still there? Heard that click.
We're no, you're still there, right? Here.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, so I've watched two seasons. I didn't even know there was a second season way back in 2014. And so I caught up the other day, and so I'm now into the present happening right now, the third season, first three shows. It's just really amazing, great show. But what it made me realize, holy shit, this guy walks around, he just talks to people. He never does any physical work. And because he knows what's going to happen next, what to do with his gang, who to take over next, he leads because the other guys, they're too dumb. They wouldn't be able to figure out anything. They don't even know how to be diplomatic or how to be cool at first, not alienate whoever they're going to take over. So I suddenly realized, holy shit, that's my life, another fucking Bob show. I've done that for 60 fucking years. Why? I went and introduced myself to Barish Foucault, introduced myself to Zappa, introduced myself all over the place, gradually taking over everything and not doing any work like the guy says in the Romeo section. He doesn't do any, he just has other smart people doing it for him. And so I said, holy shit, this is another Bob thing. And they started World War Section 3.